Winchester Talking News for Friday the 4th of March 2022. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. And your readers today are Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
And the extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 4th of March have been edited by Sonia Phillips and Sheila Shepherd. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings of the Winchester Talking newspaper and the Winchester Talking magazine, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And if there's a problem with your Sovereign player, please try plugging it in and recharging it before returning it as faulty. And the main headlines this week are: hundreds attend vigil in city to show support to Ukraine, future of skate park is secured by the council, and wet conditions for pancake race. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Heather?
Peace vigil in Abbey Gardens. Hundreds of people attended a vigil in Winchester on Tuesday evening in support of Ukraine as the Russian military continues its attack on that country. The vigil was held in Abbey Gardens from 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock in the evening and had a large turnout of around 300 people despite the cold weather. Banners and posters which read, "Winchester stands with Ukraine," were passed around attendees, along with candles, as rain poured throughout the evening. The event had been organised by Southampton and Winchester Visitors Group and Winchester City of Sanctuary. Speeches from the groups and John Harding, whose son Luke Harding is a Guardian journalist in Ukraine. The event attracted people from a wide range of backgrounds. That includes a photograph of Winchester City students with their upholding their candles and banners. The evening attracted people from a wide range of backgrounds who felt compelled to show how much they care. Winchester resident Nikki Flanagan, of age 61, said, "I'm heartbroken by the situation. I don't have any connections to Ukraine, but I can't believe what's happening in the world, and I feel really helpless." Philip Glasbourne, age 71, said, "I feel passionately that we should be pursuing peace, and there's so little we can do, but hopefully something like this will show somebody somewhere that we care. It's a terrifying situation that's escalating very rapidly." Michael Bennett, age 72, said, "War is outrageous. It's difficult to know what to do, but showing support is the least we can do. There aren't any easy answers, but what is happening in Ukraine is appalling, and clearly a lot of children and families are being killed and people are suffering. It's absolutely having an impact on me, one of the worst things I've observed." Russian forces launched attacks on civilian sites in Kyiv on Tuesday, where a TV tower and the city's Babi Yar Holocaust Memorial was hit and at least five people killed. Bella Fuchs from Prague showed her support to Ukraine during the vigil. She said, "It's very disturbing. It's unbelievable. We have an apartment in Prague and we are volunteering it to refugees. I'm scared he will use nuclear power. That's the limit. That's red line." Winchester City Councillor John Tippett Cooper said, "Today the whole of Winchester has been absolutely horrified by what is happening in Ukraine. We want to show Winchester is a place of solidarity with Ukraine. We're thinking of them. We find what is happening to them is absolutely awful. This is a community expression of that." Canon Tess Quinlorton from Winchester Cathedral said, "When I heard about this, I thought it was something we really needed to support. We have been praying in the cathedral for Ukraine for some time, and this felt like a positive action. It's hard to put into words. It's something we hoped no person would ever do, but it's hard to find the words. It's having an impact on me. It's the last thing you think about when you go to bed at night, and the first thing you think about when you wake up in the morning. You find yourself feeling incredibly helpless and desperate to do something. Thousands of people have been moved by the situation and have set up donation banks in order to take supplies to refugees. Hampshire County Council spoke out in solidarity with Ukraine. Council leader Keith Mann said, "As the world watches events unfold further in Ukraine, across Hampshire we all send our thoughts and prayers to the Ukrainian people."
Let's have the story behind the second headline, please, Noel.
Yes, future of skate park is secured by council. The future of a skate park in Winchester has been secured by the City Council. The skate park at the former River Park Leisure Centre has been the subject of a petition to save it from being disposed of as part of the redevelopment of the area, raising fears for its long-term future. At a recent full meeting of Winchester City Council, it was confirmed that the council had secured the lease back of the skate park following discussions with Winchester School of Art and users of the facility. Councillor Kelsey Learney said, "I got my first skateboard over 40 years ago, and if I'd been able to access a facility such as River Park rather than a ramshackle ramps made out of old pallets, I might have got the hang of turning around at the top rather than having a flying skateboard threatening to decapitate anyone within 10 metres. I would like to say there was never a threat to the skate park. The leader and I met with leaders of the skate community this week, with Professor Lynch from the School of Art. We had a conversation about integrating the new facility with the park. The university has said the skate park is a benefit for the School of Art rather than a detriment. What a great facility we have in River Park. Not only do young people use it throughout the district and beyond, but there is a real community of skateboarders, BMXers and scooter users who help keep it tidy and encourage beginners to get going. Having taken account of the feedback, the proposed arrangements with the university now include the provision for the council to take the lease back of the skate park. This will ensure the continuation of the skate park under the council's management, and I hope will satisfy the petitioner." Councillor John Tippett Cooper was pleased to hear that the council had come to this arrangement. He said, "Parents of Winchester adore the skate park as a free place where their children can spend countless hours unglued from their mobile devices. In the current River Park Leisure Centre site, the skate park provides the most social value. It is a fantastic community asset. The leaseback makes the council the freehold owner of the skate park, so we'll have full control of it. So the skate park is safe and guaranteed for the future."
Finally, Margaret's got the third headline story.
And it's about wet conditions for pancake race. A pancake race outside Winchester Cathedral saw more than 30 teams brave the wet conditions to raise money for charity. Teams gathered in the cathedral's outer close, representing businesses, charities, churches and other organisations from Winchester, for the annual Shrove Tuesday pancake race organised by Winchester Rotary. It was won by a team of choristers from the Pilgrim School, with home construction company Millgate finishing second. Councillor Jane Rutter, who you may know as one of our readers, was part of the Super Mayor's team. She said, "It was my fourth time doing it. I didn't do the virtual one, but I have done all the real ones." Karen Haslett, chair of the trustee of the Friends of the Family, said, "This year we are the Rotary's President's Charity of the Year. We're hoping to raise about £1,000 from this event today. Considering the weather, I think it has been a really good turnout." And this is accompanied by some lovely pictures of the choristers from Pilgrim School holding their awards, which looks as if they've been received a frying pan and a little one as well, a large frying pan, and then they've all got little ones. and there's a picture of the mayor also taking part. So it looks as if it was a jolly good event.
And that concludes the headline stories. Now we continue with Christian comment, then death notices, followed by letters to the editor, editorial comment, first person and Belgarum diary. And we'll end with items of general news. And Heather's going to start with the Christian Comment.
Christian Comment is headlined Stepping Up for Ukraine and is written this week by Nigel Hemming, who is senior pastor of the Winchester Vineyard Church. I have been horrified watching the news over the past few days. The situation in Ukraine has quickly escalated beyond imagination, and at the time of writing, which is Tuesday, things are not looking hopeful. The humanitarian crisis alone is devastating. In just a few days, many families' lives have been uprooted forever. It's so easy to feel powerless as the conflict unfolds, and I'm reminded of the famous quotation, "The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing." The good men and women of Ukraine have certainly stepped up and shown incredible courage in the face of the ruthless, senseless, and unjust violence. But what about us, the good people of Hampshire? What can we do? How can we make our own stand against such evil? As Christians, this is a moment for us to step up spiritually. We may be distanced and physically powerless, but we are engaged in a different kind of battle. As Paul wrote in his letter to the Ephesians, "Our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms." This is our moment to pray in the authority we have been given as sons and daughters of the living God. As believers, we are not powerless. God is with us. James states, "The prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective." We can tell God what we feel, and we can call out to him and ask him to act. And the Bible reminds us that God will hear our prayers. When we pray, he listens. And he responds, not always as we might wish, but he doesn't leave us hanging. That's true for us here, and judging by the testimony of believers there, it's also true for the people of Ukraine. It doesn't matter what denomination or tradition we come from. This is a time to unite, to call out to God, and to pray. Let's pray for the people of Ukraine, for peace, for mercy, and for justice. Let's pray for a de-escalation of violence and for the Russian leadership to come to their senses. Let's pray strength and courage for believers in Kyiv and across the nation as they seek to live out their faith in the middle of a battle zone. And let's pray for ourselves, that we might stay engaged in this conflict, stay alert to what's really going on, and continue to bring the challenges of our brothers and sisters before our Heavenly Father. And if you're not really the praying type, thank you for reading this far. And could I gently encourage you to have a go? You don't need experience or expertise to pray. Just go to a quiet place, turn off the distractions and talk to God. He's a good father and he's ready to listen.
Now Noel has got the death notices.
Yes. Cameron. Ian Charles Cameron, peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on Saturday the 19th of February 2022, aged 86 years. Chidgey, David William George Chidgey, Lord Chidgey of Hamble the Rice, peacefully on Tuesday the 15th of February 2022 after a short illness. Podger, Claire Gerard Podger, née Wagner, died at Winchester Hospice on Sunday 20th of February 2022, aged 82 years. Shingles, Phyllis Dorothy Shingles, née Cooper, passed away peacefully in Techfield House Care Home on 17th of February 2022, aged 89 years. Mills, Marina June Mills, with sadness to announce that Marina passed away on the 17th of February 2022, aged 86 years. And finally, Reichenbach, Robert Reichenbach, retired GP, died in Winchester on 20th of February 2022, aged 78.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. Now, there are 10 letters this week, and Margaret will start.
And this letter is from Senior Biddle, who is the Conservative candidate for the Worthies ward, and it's headed Andover Road. Sir, it is with dismay that I read the recent letter from Steve Cremersone, one of the three Liberal Democrat councillors representing the Worthies ward, Chronicle February the 24th, in reaction to our recent survey of North Winchester regarding the plan to close Andover Road North, and also to our story about the local plan. 91% of the 800-plus respondents to our Andover Road North surveys oppose its closure. Despite this, Councillor Cremersone and his fellow Liberal Democrat councillors representing the Worthies refuse to listen to their constituents or state their position on the issue. As Councillor Cremersone well knows, his job is to represent the views of his constituents, the overwhelming majority of whom oppose the closure of Andover Road North. The fact that the existing planning permission requires the road to close does not mean that the local councillors should not raise concerns to Carla Holmes, who own this permission. Councillor Todd, in his reply to my question at full council, was at pains to hide behind history and the fact that planning was eventually granted by a Conservative administration despite local Conservative opposition at the time, after Carla Holmes went to the High Court and Westminster reversed the original objection. But this was many years ago. Today, listening to the local mood now, we can see that the Andover Road North closure is clearly not wanted nor sensible, and we are pushing the Liberal Democrat-run council to state their position and to help persuade Carla Holmes to apply for the relevant variation of planning needed. I am aware it is not in the gift of the Liberal Democrat-led WCC to resolve the issue alone, but as locally elected representatives, it is the councillor's job to represent the views of the public to Carla Holmes and HCC as may be required. The Liberal Democrat response to our survey is typical of this administration. They so often fail to clearly state their position on issues. They sit on the fence when it suits them, and they fail to effect change. And this is from Senior Biddle. And as I said, she's the Conservative candidate for the Worthies ward, Mortimer Close, Kingsworthy, Winchester.
I have a letter from Sir Peter Innes on the same subject. Sir, it's high time for the decision to be made to keep Andover Road open. The rules for designating roads as trunk roads, as is Andover Road at present, or district roads or local access roads, have been cardinal in town planning for almost 60 years, since the publication of Traffic in Towns by Professor Buchanan in 1963. I suggest that anyone in doubt should inspect the short length of Winchester Avenue so far completed. It's a basic two-line road with numerous entrances from the residential access roads. It is totally lined with closely built houses, which will be intolerably noisy, containing and reflecting the noise of heavy vehicles without frequent underpasses. It will be extremely hazardous for local pedestrians. The King's Barton Town Centre is yet to be built, but the road will cut straight through it, also making Winchester Avenue completely inappropriate as a trunk road. Andover Road, as it is now, provides a wide reserve with properties set well back and is an excellent trunk road. It will continue to be the safest and most straightforward route to Winchester for long-distance buses and commercial traffic. Local buses could well be routed through King's Barton Centre. Sir Peter Innes, Nations Hill, Headbourne Worthy, Winchester.
And Keith Webb, excuse me, is writing about the same subject. Sir, re-diverting Andover Road traffic through the new housing estate It is beyond comprehension that Hampshire County Council has not yet rescinded the original mind-bogglingly stupid decision to route all traffic coming into Winchester from Three Maids Hill down Andover Road through the new housing estate. Has no one considered the risk of accidents to children living by the new road? It is lined on both sides by new houses, which are likely to be mainly bought by people with young children. In comparison, the far fewer houses in Andover Road are on the western side only, set well back from the carriageway, and are far more mature and much less likely to have young children living in them. Has no councillor considered doing a simple survey to establish just how many more children will be put at risk if the plan goes ahead? I can see absolutely no benefit in the plan, which increases the distance traffic has to drive, will cost motorists millions, and hugely increase pollution on the estate. Keith Webb, Quarry Road, Winchester. Letter editor's note, however, technically, planning permission for King's Barton, Barton Farm, including the diversion of Andover Road, was made by the government in 2012 and not by the county or city councils.
And this is a letter from Michael Reynolds. Pothole neglect. Sir, John Green's comments, Chronicle Letters, February the 13th, on the state of the A3057 between King Somborne and Romsey, are borne out by my own experience. Random patching of potholes only improves the situation for a few months. By the following winter, the road is in a poor and dangerous state again. The stretch either side of Brook is particularly hazardous. Will it take a serious accident and possible death to act as a wait-up call for the County Council to effect proper repairs and resurfacing? Michael Reynolds, Old Palace Farm, King's Somborne, Stockbridge, and there's a picture of a pothole on the A3057.
Wrong to highlight kitchen failings, writes Chris Bullen. So one might think that the Hampshire Chronicle is conducting a crusade to close down the Willow Tree. I note that you have been covering an item of news from December last year regarding the council's hygiene inspection. This was 2 months ago. I marvel that you are able to spare half a page on the oversight of leaving two small notices in the window, as you say, on February 24th. While this was a little concerning for a member of the public, surely there are bigger issues in Winchester currently. I have been using the Willow Tree on and off since 1976, after the Bird in Hand closed as a pub. Consequently, I have known a number of landlords, good and not so good. The two young men currently running the place have been doing their best since taking over, and I know that they have recently made big improvements to the kitchen since the inspection. Some staff has been replaced as well. I spent a pleasant afternoon in the Willow drinking some well-kept beer with a friend about a fortnight ago. I ate a sandwich with chips and found nothing to criticise. I've returned to this pub with a friend who lives nearby since the lockdown. I'm relieved to find it still open because in recent years we have lost nearly all the pubs in the North Walls, Eastern Lane area, the Mash Tun a few years back, the Forester's Arms and the Ship more recently. The First In and Last Out remains empty. So it does seem rather curious that the Chronicle should devote so much space to potentially damaging coverage of a well-loved pub while running a nostalgic online article about Winchester's long-gone hostelries. Chris Bullen, Battery Hill, Stanmore.
Excuse me. And this is a group letter from various chairs of parish councils around the district, and it's headlined Sheila Worry. I'll explain the Sheila in a minute. So, we the undersigned are getting increasingly concerned about the way the Winchester District Local Plan is being managed. We recognise the challenges Winchester City Council faces and the role a local plan has in finding economic and housing solutions. However, a sound local plan needs to be properly prepared with thorough public consultation. And this is in all our interests. Winchester's draft local plan outlining housing allocations is due for publication this summer. However, the timeline for consultations with Winchester residents and parish councils on the SHELA, and that is the Strategic Housing and Economic Land Availability Assessments, has slipped significantly. Winchester City Council's action plan proposed to set up a series of meetings with parish councils in QI 2021 on initial SHELA assessment and on potential locations, sites for growth, renewal, protection, areas in a new style local plan. There needs to be a huge amount of public consultation before May 2022, including the preparation, assessment and agreement of the draft local plan. Parishes across the district face SHELA proposals totalling thousands of dwellings. We are very aware, however, that the additional housing requirement for the whole of the Winchester district is 2,700 plus an undisclosed housing allocation from PFSH, Partnership for Southern Hampshire. Many of us have already advised Winchester Council that the green fields put forward by developers are largely unsuitable for housing for many reasons, including the reliance on the car, poor infrastructure including roads, schools and healthcare, flood risk and the need to preserve settlement gaps, as well as historical, agricultural and landscape value. Winchester City Council has not yet found time to discuss these with our residents. Consequently, we are not able to take local soundings about the potential for development in any ward. We urgently need Winchester Council to urgently assess and clarify their local plan proposals. So here we are, less than 3 months from the completion of the draft local plan, and we have no word on housing numbers, the SHELA assessments, or when Winchester Council will be consulting with us. Please could someone from Winchester City Council pick up the phone? And that is from John Godbold, who's chairman of Badger Farm Parish Council, Gwyn Housel, chairman Upham Parish Council, David Killeen, BEM chairman Hursley Parish Council, David Kirkby, vice chairman Oliver's Battery Parish Council, Mark Smith, chairman Otterbourne Parish Council, and Sue Wood, chairman Sparsholt Parish Council.
And this is a letter from Chris Gillen. Greenwash. Sir, after hosting the disastrous COP26, kicking climate action down the road, the Conservative government and its supporters now feel they can safely get on with business as usual. The energy price crisis has even emboldened those backbench MPs in the Nigel Lawson mould to openly propagate screwball alternative facts on the greatest crisis of our time. But the Net Zero Scrutiny Group is not the only, nor even the most dangerous form of climate change denial in the Conservative Party. Much more pernicious is the kind of greenwash our own MP tries to sell us, that behaviours do not change. The danger is not the boastful schoolboy antics of a Prime Minister who thinks the whole world is there to look after him, all coming right in the end and in the nice Micawberish way. But it's the cynical, reasonable-sounding politicians who know what they are doing is wrong, but are so tied into their cosy present that they simply switch off all sense of duty to those that come after us. It is the Grant Shapps and Rishi Sunaks of this world who most threaten it, throwing money that they have dragged from the poorest at problems that don't exist, because that's where they think the votes lie. Steve Brine knows that the M3 Junction 9 construction and the traffic it generates will add significantly to the already heavy carbon burden the UK has dumped upon a world that hasn't benefited from it. He knows that National Highways refuses to sum up the real damage it does with all its schemes, dismissing each as insignificant in world emission terms. On the other hand, he knows, or at least he has never risen to the challenge of demonstrating otherwise, that National Highways sums up imaginary benefits to compute an entirely fraudulent economic good for road building. Instead, we get a pretense at environmental concern, welcoming some imaginary cycling benefit from this obscene waste of money. COP26 showed the UK government as a world leader in hypocrisy. No surprise there. but the rottenness is not confined to Downing Street. And this is from Chris Gillam of Upper High Street, Winchester.
Roger Davey writes about the City Bridge. Sir Andrew Rutter, in Chronicle Letters, February the 17th, with all his professional experience and local knowledge, makes a fine, timely contribution as to City Bridge and what has to be done. With pedestrians all the time trying to pass one another and stepping into the road or teetering on the curb, trying to cross with cars in convoy going by, there is a constant risk of a fatality or serious injury. However, neither Andrew Rutter nor anyone, as far as I know, has proposed the obvious solution. It is an ancient bridge, yes, but lives matter, and urgent consideration should be given to moving the stone balustrade on the Weir side, 2 feet sideways, say, so that the pavement would then be wide enough for pedestrians to pass one another safely. That is structurally perfectly feasible and would avoid the intrusive eyesore of an adjoining bridge. Some, of course, would shriek, sacrilege. Not so. It would look precisely as it does today, but slightly wider, and it would meet modern needs. With appropriate consents, it can be done. Roger Davey, Rosemary Close, Winchester.
I'm excited now because this is a letter from me. It's headlined, A Missed Chance. Sir, I wonder if anyone I taught at Henry Beaufort School between 1979 and 2002 remembers a word game I used to play on the blackboard. Yes, blackboards. At odd moments during tutor times or English classes. I'm thinking of a 4 or 5 letter word, I would say. Guess what it is. Then, when the guesses came, any letter that was correct and in the right place would get a tick. Any letter correct but in the wrong place would have a tick crossed out. And all wrong letters got a straightforward cross. The winner would be whoever guessed the word first. In view of the current fashion for wordles and the vast sum that has been paid for it in America, clearly I should have patented my invention at the time. Shucks. That's Noelthorpe Tracy, Thurmond Crescent, Winchester.
This is a letter from Hugh Lambie, Meon Valley Division, Hampshire County Council, Upper Meon Valley Ward. Sir, it seems that a propensity to irrational behaviour is one of the manifestations at Winchester City Council of the degradation of the corporate brain. We have, of course, seen this all too often recently in the judicial review challenges to its decision making. It has been similarly sadly apparent in its approach to the disposal of the River Park Leisure Centre, where it has ploughed on despite legal constraints, procedural requirements, and the pesky views of the electorate. Democratic scrutiny of its decisions is as a result of the more important. It is vital that its actions are looked at critically to help identify errors and prevent wrongdoing. But the irrational behaviour seems to be infecting that too, in a very worrying development. You recently reported on the use of non-disclosure agreements, NDAs, in order to see financial information in relation to the administration's ill-considered proposals for Silver Hill. NDAs are often a sign of an organisation seeking to hide something. WCC made a complete mess of this, giving the favoured few access without NDAs, imposing invidious and unexplained indemnities on some, but not others, and then deciding the remaining councillors could see the information freely in any event. Indemnities are a form of intimidation, but even this was messed up by not explaining the consequences of what councillors were being asked to sign. The response to this illogical and inconsistent approach has been similarly irrational. Instead of a simple and effective release, it is prevaricated, seeking to blame councillors for having the temerity to raise issues rather than addressing a mess of its own making. Eventually, it claimed to have released the NDAs, but its 2 attempts at release have been legally ineffective. The reason for not giving a proper release is unclear. Are they seeking to hold on to the NDAs, avoid admitting further mistakes, or just being inept? In any event, this drift towards undermining democratic scrutiny is wrong. It would seem there are parts of WCC where the lights are on, but there's no one in. And that's from Hugh Lumby, Meon Valley Division, Hampshire County Council, High Street, Meonstoke.
And that was the last of our letters to the editor. Thank you to every single one of the contributors. Now we've got editorial comment, read by Heather.
Standing firm with the Ukrainian people. Being a local newspaper, the Hampshire Chronicle does not usually write editorials about international affairs. We are more concerned with the nitty-gritty of life in Winchester. What's happening at the City Council, neighbourhood school, church down the road, or on local roads. But the events in the Ukraine are so huge and potentially cataclysmic that this week is an exception. There was a moving vigil in Abbey Gardens on Tuesday evening when around 300 people gathered in the rain to show their support for the people of Ukraine in their hour of need. It was cathartic, but also frustrating, because it highlights what little can be done practically, other than send food and other supplies to the Ukrainians whose lives have been totally disrupted by soldiers from what is and has been for many years a criminal state run by gangsters. Ludicrously, there are simple-minded people in Winchester who believe the Kremlin lies that its armed forces are intervening to prevent the genocide of Russians living there. All we can do is pray that Putin will be forced by sanctions to come to his senses.
This week's first person is by Khalid Aziz, and Noel's going to read it.
Yes, his headline is, "Anyone see this coming?" The 10-year-old boy enters school with trepidation. His nemesis was still there, and at the first opportunity during break time, pinned the 10-year-old to a wall and started punching him as he had done almost daily for the last two terms. The 10-year-old didn't know what happened next. He had closed his eyes. When he opened them, the bully was in a crumpled heap, sobbing, with gouts of blood streaming from his broken nose. The 10-year-old's amygdala, the part of the brain just above the spine which decides fight, flight or freeze, had kicked in. After weeks of freezing, it had finally gone for the fight option. I was that 10-year-old, and the bully never bothered me again. What's more, my stock went up in the eyes of the bystanders. I had learned how to deal with bullies. Who knows what will have happened in Ukraine in the time between me writing this and you when you read it. Perhaps the peace talks on the Belarus border will have borne fruit. Doubtful. Perhaps the Russians will have laid down their arms and returned home. Even more doubtful. Or perhaps Putin will have upped the ante and carried through his nuclear threat. Hopefully very doubtful, in which case you might not be reading this at all. The West didn't exactly have an amygdala moment, but eventually it ground up through the gears and has started to face down the bully. So far, it's looking effective. The banking strictures seem to be biting. No point in having a $650 billion war chest if your money's no good anywhere in the world. The Russians are an interesting race. Having visited Moscow and St. Petersburg, I can confirm the ordinary Rusky is rather like the English-speaking Ukrainians we see on our TV screens. They have a sense of decency, they appreciate the finer things of life, and they are hospitable to foreigners. Unless they're in the pay of the government. Then they'll quite happily let you queue for 45 minutes, only to close their ticket booth on the stroke of midday for lunch. As shelves start to empty in Russia's great cities, they will feel it. Contrast that to the Russians one meets on the slopes of Courchevel or the shores of Croatia, boorish bullies in the main, quite happy to physically remove people from their table in a restaurant or beach location and transplant their overdressed wives or mistresses and hideous children. Vladimir Putin clearly sets the trend for Russian behaviour abroad. After the financial crash, during a visit to the London Stock Exchange, the Queen posed one of her customary piercing questions. Did no one see this coming? The same is being said of Ukraine, and no doubt she's already repeated the question to Boris Johnson. Actually, many did, including former Deputy Supreme Allied Commander Europe, General Sir Richard Shirriff. In 2016, he predicted war with Russia in his eponymous book. He was a few years out, but the premise on which the book was based was essentially turned out to be true. Run down the traditional defences, allow support for NATO to be half-hearted, with only a few countries contributing fully, and sooner or later, a Russian leader, untroubled by democracy, will seize his chance, particularly when we were so spineless in the face of Putin's lethal deployment of polonium in London and Novichok in Salisbury. Perhaps, as Boris avers, Putin has miscalculated, but that has more to do with the bravery of the Ukrainian people and their Kalashnikov-armed dad's army than any Western politician's strategic thinking. The lesson of that 10-year-old boy is plain to see. Keep standing up to the bully. Tighten the screw. Bring Putin in an orange jumpsuit to prosecution in The Hague. Nascent dictators need reminding. Meanwhile, Putin must moulder in the Kremlin. Who would be his food taster today?
Margaret's now going to read an alternative look at the news because it's Bulgarian Diary.
And the first item is diseased trees are felled. Trees on a city centre road have been cleared. Barfield Close in Winchester was closed for 5 days so that trees affected by ash dieback disease could be cleared. Ivan Girdler, principal tree officer at Winchester City Council, said the work was necessary to make the area safe. Before the work started, a council spokesperson said that a survey had shown a number of ash and sycamore trees were a safety concern. The reopening of the road means that the park and ride service will continue on its regular route for passengers at the Barfield Close stop. Until the 1960s, the bank was a cutting for the railway line to Newbury, and there is a picture of the bank with a pile of logs on it. And the other item is headed Spectacular Window Display. After years of struggle, Debenhams finally closed its doors last year. The store had operated from its high street base for decades. It had previously been called Sheriffham Ward, and there is, in fact, a picture of Sheriffham Ward from Hampshire Record Office on Sussex Street, showing it adorned in a spectacular way, celebrating a royal occasion, judging by the flags, bunting and crown. It looks to be around 100 years ago, or maybe pre-Great War. We will never see its like again.
A lighting up time ends on Friday the 4th of March at 6:45 a.m. and begins at 5:52 p.m. On Wednesday the 9th of March, it ends at 6:34 a.m. and begins at 5:59 p.m. Notice of an event. An open site, Hampshire's largest organisation supporting people with sight loss, will be holding an information day on the 16th of March at Winchester Discovery Centre, which is now called the ARC. The day will run from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Open sight independent living advisors and equipment demonstrators will have their latest low vision aids and daily living equipment for demonstration. This is a great opportunity to come along and find out information and advice about the services in the Winchester area. And for more details about the work of Open Sight, there's a telephone number which is 023 8064 1244. That's 023 8064 1244. And we'll continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Heather.
Driver thanked for helping injured woman in the storm. A Winchester resident has expressed his gratitude towards a driver who stopped to help his hurt elderly mother during Storm Franklin. Keith Hearn has thanked a driver for stopping his vehicle to help his injured mother during last week's storms. Keith had taken his mother to home base in Eastern Lane in Winnell last Monday, when Storm Eunice and Storm on February the 1st, this is that this happened, when Storm Eunice and Storm Franklin started, and a strong gust of wind knocked his mother to the floor. Margaret Hearn, aged 87, suffered a broken femur, which doctors say could have been fatal if she had been moved or tried standing up. Mr. Hearn said, "I was placing some shopping into the boot of my car when my mum crashed to the ground. She'd opened the passenger door of my car when a gust of wind threw her to the ground. I would like to thank a chap called Chris, who was driving a gold-coloured Ford Ranger. He called 999 and he parked his vehicle to block the wind from hitting my mum, who had to remain on the ground. I could see she'd broken her leg. Chris was so good because what he did with his vehicle was to block the wind so mum could stay safely on the ground without moving."
Councillors reject plan for new incinerator. Plans for a controversial new incinerator in Hampshire have been rejected. Hampshire County Council met to reject Veolia's application for an incinerator near Alton along the A31. The facility, which would have been operational 24 hours a day, would deal with 1.5 times more waste than the incinerator in Portsmouth. Concerns about the visual and environmental impact, as well as whether the facility was truly needed, were raised by residents and campaigners alike. Christopher Napier, Vice President of CPRE Hampshire, said, "We consider that this proposal is very much the wrong development in the wrong place. The magnitude of change that would arise from the building would undoubtedly be large. Views over the River Wey to the National Park would be seriously damaged." Alison Melville from Binstead Eco Network added, "The county needs more recycling capacity, not more incinerators. More of what's burned now is plastic, so incinerators are becoming more carbon intensive, and burning plastic in a climate emergency is insane. Hampshire has no need for this plant." William Butler, owner of the nearby West End Flower Farm, said the incinerator would threaten the future of his business. He said the impact of the incinerator would be devastating, both professionally and for our business. It will turn a historic rural landscape into an industrial dumping ground. The facility would stretch up to the railway line between Alton and Basingstoke, which connects Hampshire to London Waterloo. Network Rail, NATS and Hart Borough Council made no objection to the application. Historic England raised concerns, and objections were made by CPRE Hampshire, Alton Borough Council, MPs Damien Hines and Jeremy Hunt, and the County Council's own landscaping team, among others. But Veolia's representatives insisted the incinerator wasn't just beneficial to Hampshire, but essential for the future. Southern UK planning manager Simon McKee said, "The site is sized to meet the local need. 365,000 tonnes of waste is currently landfilled or exported out of Hampshire. We appreciate there are local concerns that have been raised. The plan is safe. It won't cause traffic congestion and moves residual waste away from landfill. It will save carbon from day one and has a limited visual impact. Half of all waste would be recovered as heat and electrical energy, according to the plans." Liberal Democrat leader Councillor Keith House added, "The need for a new incinerator can be argued both ways, but what we're trying to achieve is a reduction of the need to even think about processing waste." At the vote, three councillors voted in favour of the plans, with 12 against.
Plans for business deferred. A controversial proposal at a village business near Winchester has been deferred at the last minute. The Little Kitchen Company has applied for changes at its premises on London Road, Kingsworthy. The plans are a resubmission of a scheme that was rejected by planners in 2020 and also on appeal in 2021, for reducing the size of a first floor flat, creating a second flat, a new outbuilding and changing to the parking layout. Planning officers were recommending the plan for approval, but it was deferred at the committee meeting for further consideration of access from the public highway. The plan has been met with 9 objections, with parking a major issue for residents in St Mary's Close. County Councillor Jackie Porter and City Councillor Steve Cramerson both object, saying it's overdevelopment. The Little Kitchen Company has operated from the site since 2019, preparing and storing food. The site was occupied by the Rod Box. A report to the committee said the application is a resubmission of 19-02-057-FUL, which was dismissed at appeal due to the lack of appropriation mitigation for the release of nitrates into the River Itchen and after the Solent.
Chamber concert at Winchester Church. A chamber orchestra is performing a concert in Winchester this month. Nova Forrester Classical Players are playing at St Paul's Church on March the 19th at 7:30 in the evening. The orchestra's guest conductor, Paul Ingram, said, "As guest conductor of Nova Forrester, I'm delighted to be able to perform with the orchestra in my home city. The concert offers a great opportunity to hear some wonderful repertoire written for string orchestra by Barber, Britten, Shostakovich and John Ireland in the magnificent acoustics and surroundings of St Paul's Church. The group, which the picture shows several very young musicians playing, is based in New Forest, was founded in 2018 and is gaining recognition for its innovative programming and electric performances of orchestral music." Well, everyone here seems to be playing a normal violin, so I'm not quite sure how much of it's electrical and how much of it is traditional. Tickets cost £20. They're available on the door on the night or online at ticketsource.co.uk / Nova Forrester Classical Players.
On the buses for phone clampdown. More than 30 drivers were stopped for using a mobile phone at the wheel after being spotted by police travelling on a bus across Hampshire. A three-day operation was carried out by officers attached to the Joint Operations Road Policing Unit run by Hampshire Constabulary and Thames Valley Police. Using a bus loaned by Stagecoach, police were able to observe motorists in their vehicles. If anyone was seen using a mobile phone or was not in proper control of their vehicle, officers radioed nearby colleagues who pulled the driver over. Police covering the A40 and A34 around Oxford, where 10 drivers were stopped for using mobile phones and 4 for not being in proper control. Then on the following 2 days, officers covered the A34 in Hampshire and Berkshire, the A303, M27, M3 and A31. On the second day, 10 motorists were stopped for using a mobile phone, 3 for having insecure loads and 2 for not being in proper control. Then on the third day, 14 drivers were stopped for using a mobile phone, 6 for having insecure loads and 3 for not being in proper control. Sergeant Dave Hazlitt of the Joint Operations Road Policing Unit said the operation has shown that whilst the majority of motorists are being safe, a small minority are still choosing to use their mobile phones when driving. Research has shown that you are 4 times more likely to be involved in a collision and be less likely to notice and react to hazards in time by the distraction that mobile devices cause. Thank you to our partners, Stagecoach and National Highways, for their support in helping us to carry out this operation, said Sergeant Hazlitt.
Another crash, another call for improvements at Junction. A county councillor is again calling for measures to make a junction in Kingsworthy safer. The junction on the A33 near the Cart and Horses pub has seen several collisions, sparking calls for change. Jackie Porter, County Councillor for the Itchen Valley Division, has asked for a new road layout. In a letter to Councillors Rob Hanby and Russell Oppenheimer, she said, "I campaigned with the Worthies residents for a safe junction in 2014, and we fought for a 40-mile-per-hour limit, lighting and CCTV. These were installed, but the lines on the road and the signs on the poles are confusing and accidents still happen. The junction is still not understood by drivers, and so many people tell me that there is no signage telling them to give way. It just isn't noticeable. Drivers have suggested stop signage on the B3047 side roads. I've asked for this before and has been rejected by Hampshire County Council. Hampshire County Council have been asked for a comment.
Fears for family in danger in Ukraine. A Ukrainian couple who run a business in Winchester have described their heartache after they said goodbye to their son and mother over the phone. My apologies about pronunciation of the names. Natalia Yakimenko and Sergei Rukovsky of Landguard Road Shirley, who run cleaning franchise Daily Poppins, said the attacks have brought pain and sadness into their lives. Mrs. Yakimenko said, she's aged 46, she said, Monday night my mother phoned to say goodbye, which was very hard. We're very scared because loud bombs are dropping near her house. My son is an IT student at the Polytechnic University. He may have to go and fight. We haven't seen each other since November last year. People are either hiding in a cellar underground or making makeshift weapons to protect themselves. Going outside is very dangerous because missiles are dropping everywhere and roads are blocked by Russian tanks. Natalia's mother, Nadia, aged 71, and son, Ilya, aged 23, are hiding in a basement, but run the risk of starvation, with supermarkets empty and tanks blocking deliveries. Mr. Rukovsky, aged 51, said, well, they're worried about food. People are queuing in supermarkets for over 3 hours. If I was in the Ukraine, I would be going to fight. I need to fight for my family. I want to be able to support them. We feel lucky because we are safe here, but it's better to be with our family. They lost contact with their family on Tuesday after mobile networks were destroyed.
An extraordinary Winchester scientist. Tributes have been paid to a scientist from Winchester who achieved so much in his life after he died aged 88. Anthony Proudman, whose work laid the foundations for modern computing and gaming, died on January the 5th, and his funeral was held earlier this month. His family and friends paid tribute to the extraordinary grandfather. Friend Paul Appleton said, anyone who ever met Anthony Proudman would remark on a gentle and courteous man. What made him extraordinary for someone who achieved so much in his life was that this natural kindness would still be what first came to mind if they had known him as I did for 37 years. Mr. Proudman won a senior exhibition to Emmanuel College, Cambridge in 1953 to read mathematics and natural sciences before going on to work at Standard Telephones and Cables, where he won the 1958 Telecommunications Engineering and Manufacturing Association Graduate Award. And then a year later, he joined the fledgling UK research arm of IBM in Hursley. By early 1960s, in a small team, he had developed the effective forerunner to ROM, read-only memory, which not only underpinned IBM's redefinition of commercial computing at the time, but also laid the foundation for today's personal computing and gaming technology. In the 1970s, Anthony's team anticipated another revolution, the Internet, when they took over the European Labs computer network, which connected company and university computers across Europe and the US. Mr. Appleton said Anthony would always insist that it was the refreshing culture of collaboration at IBM which made these technical achievements possible, but the wisdom to hire brilliant graduates must also have played its part. Anthony Proudman may not be a household name, but it is very likely that every household that has access to a computer enjoys the technology that he and his team developed. He was certainly recognised for his work by IBM, who rewarded him exceptionally with 2 Outstanding Technical Contribution Awards, and by the British Computer Society, who elected him a Fellow in 1988. Mr. Proudman was also keen on art and architecture, culture and society. In later years, as a trustee of Winchester Cathedral Enterprises, he was involved in the project to build a new visitor's centre, and as an influential member of the City of Winchester Trust, he chaired the team that prepared its first vision statement. Mr. Proudman was married to Elizabeth for 63 years, and they had three children, Kate, Hugh and James. Mr. Appleton said, "Those of us who were privileged to have been welcomed into that family knew a man whose generosity was matched only by his integrity. There seems to us no artificial boundary between the scientist and the person. For his life, as for his work, his light will shine for a very long time."
Trust unveils plans for tree-lined avenues. Hinton Ampner will soon have more than 300 young trees planted to recreate the Age of Enlightenment and help mark the Queen's Platinum Jubilee. It is part of the National Trust programme of tree planting across its nationwide estates. The plans are among proposals from the Trust for the Queen's Green Canopy, an initiative to celebrate the monarch's Platinum Jubilee year. Also known as the Age of Reason, the Enlightenment was an intellectual movement beginning in the early 1700s that championed science, progress, tolerance, and the pursuit of happiness. Its ideals of knowledge and learning spilled over into landscape gardening, with the ordered parklands of wealthy elites becoming a symbol of human dominance over nature. The vast majority of trees in this once dominant feature have now been lost to disease, old age and storms. At Hinton Ampner near Alresford, more than 300 trees will be planted in the parkland, in keeping with the picturesque aesthetic the estate was styled in during the 18th century. At Deerham Park, a National Trust stately home on the outskirts of Bath, only one of the original 80 trees is still standing, but the avenue is set to be replanted under the Jubilee plans. It is expected to take 40 years for the saplings to grow to a height to recreate the avenue's former grandeur. Steve Morgan, gardener and outdoor manager at the National Trust Tredegar House in South Wales, said, "I've looked after the Oak Avenue for the past 25 years. I've seen trees falter and flourish, but to be able to replant new trees to help conserve and preserve this wonderful avenue into the future is a legacy to cherish." The Trust will also hold plantings of single commemorative trees, including the planting of two Cornish elms close to the Queen Victoria Jubilee Oak tree planted in 1897 at Tregwanton in Cornwall. John Deaking, head of trees and woodland at the National Trust, said, "There is something really special about marking national occasions like this year's Jubilee through tree planting, knowing that the tree should grow and last for generations to come as a marker of a significant moment in history. Our support of the Queen's Green Canopy has catalysed an ambitious programme to restore avenues, conserve ancient trees and protect some of our ancient woodlands."
Calls for action over Highgate graffiti. Campaigners are calling for urgent action after a graffiti attack on a Winchester monument. Vandals defaced information boards and walls at Highgate, the entrance to medieval Hyde Abbey, the last known resting place of King Alfred. The campaign group, the Friends of Highgate, is pressing for better maintenance of the building. It deplored the appearance over the weekend of graffiti. Edward Fennell, the coordinator of Friends of Highgate, said today, "This graffiti is the culmination of a series of hostile acts towards this historic monument, which is of national significance as the site of King Alfred the Great's burial. If this does not persuade the City Council to sit up and take notice, I don't know what will. The terms of the Charter for Highgate provide a blueprint for what should be done. Although occasional chalk messages have appeared before, this is the first occurrence of large-scale vandalism of this nature within the gate itself." And Mr. Fennell said, "It's part of a long-running pattern of abuse of the Grade 1 listed building, which ranges from littering and urination to drug dealing. He said action to deter further violations is now urgent. The Charter for Hyde Gate, first issued in 2018, specifically recommended the installation of closed-circuit television within the gateway in order to prevent this kind of antisocial activity. The campaign group is also unhappy about the weak response to the pigeon problem. In a blog, it said, "Pigeon fanciers rejoice. Winchester City Council's painfully slow attempts to rid Hyde Gate of its posse of pigeons, which pooed everywhere, has failed entirely. The pigeons are back in force and looking better established, healthier and happier than ever." City Councillor John Tippett Cooper, whose ward includes Hyde Gate, said, "We're really upset to see this graffiti," and immediately reported the sign for cleaning. "Unfortunately, the graffiti in the area is getting worse, and we are reporting more and more incidents." Hyde Gate was earmarked for a share of £450,000 of investment in last week's council budget meeting, and the council will now seek the approval of Historic England to start restoration works. The installation of pigeon proofing was completed a couple of weeks ago, but there have been problems with the installation, meaning some pigeons are still able to sit along two of the ledges in Hyde Gate. The contractor was urgently called back and visited the site last week. We expect them to remedy the defect in the installation as soon as possible this week.
Family history has never been so easy. An agreement between the Hampshire Genealogical Society and the Hampshire County Council office is creating a novel one-stop hub for anyone exploring the history of their family and related inquiries at the Hampshire Record Office, Winchester. For the past few months, HGS, that's Hampshire Genealogical Society, volunteers have been manning a research desk at the entrance to the Hampshire Record Office search room, where anyone exploring any aspect of family history can seek advice free of charge. This includes specific inquiries or general guidance on tackling particular problems. It is yet another benefit offered by an all-Hampshire society that for many years has provided unequalled facilities for discovering who you are. With a membership of 1,900 and slowly rising, HGS is by far the largest group in the county devoted to uncovering the past. Its president is the celebrated historian, broadcaster and genealogist Dr. Nick Barrett, who was the consultant and lead researcher for the first four series of Who Do You Think You Are, and is currently working on various projects associated with history and heritage. He is a fellow of the Royal Historical Society, runs Styx Research Agency, and is director of Learner and Discovery Services at the Open University. Until last August, the HGS Research Centre was based in Cosham, where a dedicated band of volunteers have worked over the years collecting data on a wide front, not only births, marriages and deaths, but also monumental inscriptions and village histories. Over the years, an archive of information on specific families and other topics has been assembled. Ongoing projects include the transcription of thousands of records on Britons from the county who died overseas. Also in hand for use by members is a huge collection of unwanted BMD certificates for Hampshire that members have bought, only to find that they are not relevant in their particular interests. Commenting on the new arrangement at the Hampshire Record Office, HGS Chairman Paul Pinhorn said, "The move to Winchester was undertaken after careful consideration. The Cosham volunteers have done a great job, and we're very grateful to them. But since coming to the Record Office, our footfall has increased. Although we have unfortunately lost some volunteers, we've been delighted to find that there are many new ones who have come in from all about, not only Winchester, but Andover, Fair Oak, Romsey and Fareham. Our research desk is now in the HRO between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and we hope to extend it to other days when we have the volunteers." HGS also has its own office in the building, as well as space for archives and the large collection of books brought from Cosham. The benefits of membership of HGS, which costs £15 a year, are enormous. They include a quarterly magazine, a member's handbook, and access to indices at Winchester on baptism, marriage, burial, census, monumental inscriptions, and other items. A huge amount of BMD data on all the parishes in Hampshire, some dating from 1537, transcribed by volunteers and currently on CD-ROMs, will be available on another storage medium in the near future. HES sells the Eve McLaughlin Genealogy Guides and antique ordnance survey maps published by Alan Godfrey for many parts of the county, with added benefit of directory entries from the period on the back. Also available are HES booklets on more than 100 Hampshire villages, written by Roy Montgomery, which provide useful information for researchers not familiar with a particular location. HES keeps a database of surnames of interest for members, who can also join one of the many local groups or participate in national and even international discussions. Paul explained, one great asset of HES membership is sharing information with others in one of the 13 area groups spread throughout the county. Also, we hold separate national and international Zoom sessions every 2 months. There are speakers on topics of interest and plenty of opportunities to chat with other members and make new links. Other benefits of membership include access to news and presentations made exclusively to HES. Recently, for example, experts from the online genealogy site Find My Pass gave members, including some from California, British Columbia and Australia, a master session on the 1921 census, which has just been released. A video of the session has been posted on the membership-only area of the HES website. The 1921 census will enable many family historians to extend their studies to the period after the First World War. It's available on a Find My Past behind a paywall, £3.50 per page, transcriptions £2.50, with small reductions for subscribers. For those prepared to travel, however, access is free of charge at three regional hubs. The most convenient for Hampshire is the National Archives, Kew, where records can be downloaded on personal devices, including smartphones. One researcher is already rejoicing at saving £700. Many features are similar to earlier censuses, but there are also significant additions. For the first time, the 1921 census gives the names of employers and their addresses. This has already enabled Paul to discover the name and address of the restaurant in London where one of his great-grandfathers was working in 1921. It shows that he was born in the small Italian village of Cadenabbia on the west shore of Lake Como. Interestingly, in the 19th century, this was a popular health resort with English travellers. In 1891, one of the first Anglican churches in the country was built there, and Mary Shelley, wife of the poet, wrote about the place after a visit in 1840. Not everyone will find such exotic family links, but there is much in the 1921 census that will add to researchers' family trees. The next opportunity to get a glimpse of ancestors will not be until 2051, when only those relatively young will be able to benefit, because the 1931 census was destroyed by fire and a census was not held during the Second World War. Limited information from the start of the war can be found on the 1939 register compiled to issue ID cards and available on the commercial sites Ancestry and Find My Past. These sites, together with the British newspaper archive, can be searched in public libraries in the county without charge, with the exception of the 1921 census, on Go Online public access computers, not on personal devices. Downloading in libraries is free, but there are charges for printing. Ancestry was made available in libraries in January, but it's not expected at the Hampshire Record Office until the end of March, according to an HCC spokesperson. There are many other sites online for family histories, some free of charge, like Free BMD, Free CEN, Family Search, and Irish Genealogy. while even those with a paywall can often be accessed with special offers and free trials. Scottish records can be searched without charge and documents downloaded for a free. From www.scotlandspeople.gov.uk.
Rewards for rail commuters. A new rewards programme is offering rail commuters discounts on food, drink and a whole host of attractions across London. South Western Railway, which runs services across Hampshire, is dishing out nearly 50 money-saving deals through its new commuter reward scheme, with offers ranging from complimentary wine to money off speed dating. SWR customers can bag a bargain through SWR's commuter rewards page, with the programme being entirely free to sign up to and continuously updated. The new scheme has been designed specifically for commuters in light of a growing number of people returning to the office and forms part of SWR's new Spread Your Wings campaign, which is set to feature on local radio and television. The campaign, which launches today, is designed to remind SWR customers of the benefits of getting back into the office and the flexible ticket options now available. Commercial Director Peter Williams said, "Heading to the office needn't be all work and no play. Getting back into the capital gives us all the perfect excuse to get the best out of London, from its great pubs and restaurants to world-class museums and shops. By offering dozens of great deals designed specifically for commuters, our new rewards programme makes a whole range of post-work activities even easier and cheaper to enjoy. To complement the opportunity for our customers to bag a bargain, we're delighted to launch our new campaign, which is ably led by our two Avian friends, Sandy and Wes. With new flexible ticket options available too, now is the perfect time for our customers to spread their wings and rediscover all that the big city has to offer."
Budget cuts agreed by County Council. Budget cuts of £80 million have been voted through by the County Council. Hampshire County Council met in full to debate and vote on the budget for the next 2 years. The County Council has made cuts across almost all departments to make up for the £80 million deficit, despite dipping into some of the Council's reserves. Councillors from across the political spectrum have blamed this on getting less support from the Conservative government, but appear to disagree on the severity of the problem. Leader of Hampshire County Council, Councillor Keith Mann, said last Thursday, "In general terms, we have slightly less money than we had bargained for, because the white paper on social care has cost us money rather than giving us more. Given the funding pressures and shortfalls, balancing the budget has been a challenging task, and without a long-term sustainable funding solution to the growth in social care costs, the County Council is simply not financially equipped. We urgently need a solution from the government. We have long campaigned for more autonomy to be given to county councils to enable greater local control over local finances and identify opportunities to generate income, particularly as the gulf widens between demand for social care and the amount of money now available to deliver it. Overall, the County Council will spend £2.4 billion on services, with public health the only area safe from budget cuts." Labour member from Basingstoke Central, Councillor Kim Taylor, added, "Year after year, we all sit here and try to make our part of the world a better place, and every year we are thwarted by the lack of financial support from government. It makes me feel a sense of resignation." The budget was voted through with 46 in favour and 16 against and 2 abstentions.
Activists' report slams EA accuracy. Concerns have been raised about whether the Environmental Agency is effectively regulating southern water. A new report from activists Windrush Against Sewage Pollution, which is campaigning for a clean-up of the River Windrush in Gloucestershire, suggests that the Environment Agency could use more accurate data than it currently does. The report's author, Professor Peter Hammond, said the Environment Agency currently measures spill start and stop times and annual spilling hours per CSO when they could get recorded data every 15 minutes. He and other environmental campaigners believe this is stopping them from holding firms like Southern Water to account. Mike Owens from Hailing's Sewage Watch said, "It's very clear from Professor Hammond's report that the Environment Agency is not doing its job properly. There are more accurate statistics available on stormwater releases, and yet they choose to take averages instead. If the Environment Agency used more accurate figures, then it would be easier to spot discrepancies with companies like Southern Water." In December, Southern Water was ranked as one of the worst water companies in England and Wales due to poor drinking water, high levels of pollution and burst pipes. The firm has vowed to improve and is investing £18 million on upgrading its storm overflow capacity at Budd's Farm in a bid to reduce future pollution. As for the Environment Agency, it states that it does receive specific monitoring data for the duration of a stormwater overflow. This data is recorded at 2-minute or 15-minute intervals. A spokesman for the Environment Agency said, "Where there is evidence of non-compliance, we will not hesitate to pursue the water companies concerned and take appropriate action, as with evidence by the conclusions of 7 prosecutions against water and sewage companies in 2021. Sewage pollution can be devastating to human health, local biodiversity and our environment. Water companies, regulators, farmers and others must do more to tackle this. To date, 1,300 storm overflows and storm tanks at wastewater treatment works have been identified as spilling frequently and prioritised for further scrutiny following our review of data from over 12,000 sites. Our separate major investigation into possible unauthorised spills at thousands of sewage treatment works is ongoing." In 2021, the Environment Agency concluded 7 prosecutions against water and sewage companies, with more prosecutions ongoing.
Eviction reprieve for city traders. 2 Winchester shops facing eviction have been handed a stay of execution by the City Council. Sunflower Emporium and Suki Market had previously been told they had until the end of February to leave King's Wharf amid Winchester City Council's long-term plan to revamp the area and transform it into an arts and creative hub. However, they've since been granted a 3-month extension, which will see them stay until mid-May, which civics chiefs say allows them time to find alternative premises. But despite the council's insistence that both businesses will be moved on, Hai Dong Su, the owner of Suki Market, has said he is hopeful he'll hang on to the unit from which he's been trading for over 10 years. He said, "We've been given a 3-month extension from the council and we're waiting to hear on a final decision. If we must go, then it gives us extra time to find somewhere else. But of course, I will still want to stay. We are set up here, we love the area and we have a loyal base of local customers who know where we are and keep coming back. The whole community, including the other shops in King's Walk, have all been really supportive. They want us to stay, but we will have to wait and see." Former Winchester City Council election candidate Andy Lai has previously campaigned for more support for both shops. He described the extension as a stay of execution and not a reprieve. He said, "Mr. Su has just contacted me to thank me and all his other local supporters for our recent help. Winchester City Council has confirmed they will extend the lease of his shop by 3 months and not evict him as they proposed. However, this is only a stay of execution and not a reprieve. Mr. Su has spent the last 3 months looking for other premises, but they have all either been too expensive or the location has been unsuitable. I have suggested that Mr. Su should adapt his shop to fit in with the council's plans for King's Wharf becoming an artistic and cultural hub by hosting a series of Chinese cultural talks displaying art from the art college and local community, which would be free for the artists. Barbara Cooper, owner of Sunflower Emporium, said she's looked at vacant units in the city centre, but they're either too small or nearly double the rent. She said, "We were originally given an extension till the end of March to move out, but I got an email through around 10 days ago to say it had been pushed back until May. But either way, I've told them I'm not leaving. They'll have to take me to court to get me out." A council spokesperson said, "The council contacted the tenants to let them know that we appreciate the difficulty they are having. So their lease has been extended and the situation will be reviewed in 3 months."
Prince Charles opened the Ark in a rescheduled visit. Prince Charles visited the Statue of Licorice of Winchester during a rescheduled visit to the city. He was meant to unveil the sculpture of the medieval Jewish figure during a highly anticipated visit earlier this month, but was forced to withdraw at the 11th hour after a positive COVID test when people were already lining the street in anticipation. So Lord Lieutenant for Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, delivered the speech on Prince Charles's behalf, including a promise to return to Winchester to view the statue once he was fit to do so. And true to his word, His Royal Highness came and saw the statue on Thursday, March the 3rd, and he also used the occasion to open Winchester's new Ark. It was once its library.
Climate update. Winchester's climate emergency targets are progressing well, a meeting heard. Councillor Brian Lamming raised the question and was impressed at the progress being made. The council had set a target of 2030 for zero carbon across the district. He asked Councillor Hannah Williams, Cabinet Member for Climate Emergency, what the latest updates were on the emergency targets that have been set for 2024. Councillor Williams said the council is making good progress towards its ambitious target to become carbon neutral by 2024. The latest published carbon footprint report was for the year to March 2020 and showed the council's emissions represented a like-for-like reduction of 11.7% from the previous year. The carbon footprint report for the year to March 2021 will be published imminently, and this is expected to show a further significant reduction. Key contributors to this were the move up to 100% renewable electricity tariff for the council's operational buildings and a significant reduction in staff commuting that was heavily influenced by the COVID outbreak. To maintain our progress towards carbon neutrality, we will aim to build on this positive change towards a more sustainable working and travel patterns. This positive trajectory was reflected by the recent assessment of the Council's Carbon Neutrality Action Plan by Climate Emergency UK.
Hilly 10K Run. A new running event is coming to Winchester later this year. The new course, called the Winchester Hilly 10K, will take place alongside the popular half marathon. It will be on September the 25th, with the 10K runners initially following the half marathon route before peeling off and encountering the rest of Winchester's historical landmarks, scenery and hills. Together, the two distances and the fun run will create the new Winchester Marathon event. The Winchester Hilly 10K is the creation of Hampshire-based sport event management business Rees Leisure, which has been organising running events in Winchester since 2016. The event will bring more runners, businesses and charities to Winchester, encouraging a fun day out for friends and family. The event charity sponsorships are national charity Macmillan and local charity Naomi's House. Chris Rees, director of Rees Leisure, said, "The Winchester Hilly 10K distance is designed to encourage all runners from a variety of ages and abilities to take part in a fun event and a historic and beautiful setting. Winchester has always been a successful venue for our previous events, and we know runners love coming here, hence why we have provided participants with more options to get active."
I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for the week ending the 4th of March 2022. Thank you to our editors, Sonia Phillips and Sheila Shepherd. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And, of course, thanks to today's readers. Heather Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Margaret Boyden.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now. And I hope you stay safe and well in the week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the correct address label on the front of the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.